For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
The most memorable edition of Rewind to Dynamite continues. We have just gone through the news. I was stunned at Way's thoughts about Saraya, Mina Shirakawa, Dark State in NXT, and then we also went through all of the TNA cuts. It's our annual TNA upheaval that we broke down and went through a bunch of the names, some that you know, some that maybe you don't know, giving
some that we know,
some that we do know. Yeah, so
maybe we can introduce them to you. Yeah, we spoke a little bit about our favorite new faction, Dark State from NXT, and a little bit later on, also in the Post Cafe, John will be speaking a little bit about Dark Side.
That's right. Yes, and you're going to be talking about a dark bit of programming from ESPN Plus that you did not seem too enthused by, the fact that you watched the premiere edition of Stephanie's Places.
I will let you know how I feel about it. I didn't dislike it, but CM Punk was on and it was Stephanie McMahon talking to CM Punk. And you know what? For 24 minutes, I gave them my time. I will let you know how I feel later on in the Post Cafe.
All right, so we are going to go through Dynamite, and then for those on the Post Wrestling Cafe, the XL edition, we will have our thoughts on the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Hell in a Cell and Stephanie's Places. You can go XL for $6 a month. It gives you 30 days access. We are live after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with all of our bonus shows, including multiple Rewind Aways per month, Collision Course every Saturday night with John Cena and Kate from Montreal, MCU Later, which is going through all the episodes of the new Daredevil Born Again series, which dropped 2 episodes this week, and also up for Double Double and Espresso members this week, our latest book club, where myself and Neil Flanagan reviewed The Queen of the Ring by Jeff Lean, with a special Easter egg at the end of that particular show as well. So all of that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Coming up later this week on Friday, Kate from Montreal, Karen Peterson, our official movie reviewers. They were able to watch the new Luna Vachon documentary, Lunatic, and they're going to be releasing that review on the cafe this Friday. And then we're also going to be releasing a free interview that Karen did with the director, Kate Kroll. So that is all coming out on Friday. So look out for all of that great stuff.
Yeah, and lots to come in the next month ahead for WrestleMania season, of course, and all of our
other bonuses coming up. You're right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, April will be a very, very busy month. We'll be going over some of that in the coming days and next week as well, about the WrestleMania plan and how we are tackling everything. But now we are heading to St. Paul, Minnesota for AEW Dynamite, which did not have a snowstorm to contend with this week. WrestleTix noting 3,432 tickets out. And Way, we've got a title sponsor for the show, Minecraft the Movie, which just wrapped this entire building up. I don't know if Minecraft means anything to you, but my son Max is so stoked for this movie. This is really big among his contingent of friends. So this is a this is one I have been told I need to take him to next weekend.
I guess I know a little about it, but not enough to maybe be so hyped about it. But seeing some of the clips, even in this intro, I kind of got an excitement just to kind of see like a Jack Black and a Jason Momoa within that world. It looked pretty wild, this one.
I know nothing about Minecraft, but I may be able to report back to you. I should be doing my my own movie reviews because I had to take my daughter to see Paddington in Peru this past weekend.
Oh, and?
I kind of enjoyed this film. I mean, are you familiar with Paddington?
Of course.
Yeah, I think everyone knows Paddington at some point.
The bear with the raincoat?
I mean, it's a little dark. Like, there's this evil nun that, is anyone listening to this going to be ruined?
Spoil away, talking about Paddington in Peru? Does Paddington die?
Well, his Aunt Lucy goes missing. She's in this, like, old folks' home back in Peru, and this nun reaches out to Paddington and says that Aunt Lucy is not doing well. She's really depressed. And I was like, okay, this is kind of heavy. Goes to takes the whole family to Peru to visit Aunt Lucy, who has gone missing. And we learn later this nun sent her off in a canoe out to sea, just let her go. She breaks her glasses, so she's blinded, and she's gone way off, and they have to go on this hunt for Aunt Lucy for the whole duration of the movie. It's a thriller.
I won't tell you if Aunt Lucy lives or not
at the end.
I'm gonna go see it tomorrow.
Yes, they make it to El Dorado.
Okay, so thumbs up from John Pollock.
I didn't hate it. Okay. Okay. It was fine. It was an hour and 45 minutes, which was, I don't think I was ready for anything more with Paddington. Me and Paddington were good after an hour and 45 minutes of my investment. But now we get on to Dynamite, and we start off with Kenny Omega and Blake Christian in a non-title match. We get the note that Blake Christian on a 7-match win streak on Ring of Honor. And we get this highlight package, and they did include the 0 Hour tag match he was involved in at Revolution, where, in fact, Blake Christian ate the pin. So that was not part of his 7-match win streak in ROH, but regardless. So Christian pie faces and gives the middle finger to Kenny, and then Christian goes after the body. And Excalibur notes, I think this is going to be the story of Kenny's career, of everyone going after his body. I was like, yes, this is going to be the story of every Kenny Omega match from now until eternity. So Christian uses an eye gouge, did this incredible Fosbury through the top and middle rope. And then after a handspring off the ropes, Omega catches him with a knee to the back, Snapdragons, V-Trigger, and One Winged Angel to win in a very rare sub-5-minute Kenny Omega TV match, which they could put this guy on every week and just have 4-minute TV matches. I think they would be tremendous. I'd like this match for
Certainly after a pretty extensive layoff from Kenny, seeing a Kenny Omega singles match on TV still feels like a relatively special occasion. Like, still feels like an attraction to me. And I think I'm just thinking back to the whole discussion about, remember the Allen Angels match that Kenny Omega had and the big sort of controversy
that was the end of Kenny Omega's career.
Yeah, that I think I was among the people that were critical of maybe how much of a 50-50 match that was. And I wonder if there's any sort of consideration or change in philosophy now, but this was not that. This was a lot much more traditional, I would say old school booking style of showcase match for one of your stars and somebody in Blake Christian, who I think played perfectly the role of, don't want to call him jobber, but the type of enhancement talent there, somebody that we might not necessarily know that much about if you're strictly a Dynamite viewer, but somebody who's capable of delivering a fantastic performance. He got a little bit out of this.
He got a good amount of offense. He got a dive spot in this. I thought he gave Christian a lot in this. This is a perfect example. They could have had a great 15-minute match, but didn't need to be.
This isn't the forum for it.
It's not. My one criticism of going into this show is just when you looked at the lineup, you could look at up and down, and I wasn't not looking forward to any of these matches, but the show did lack a main event to me. I don't think you can look at any of these matches that would qualify as such.
But what is a main event these days?
I think you want for a Dynamite main event, I think you want something that there are, a significant amount of names that are involved in programs with one another. I just looked at these 5-6 matches that they had, and none of them jumped out to me as like that that big match for the week that you peak for on a Dynamite.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like I just more so think about like the big match again, like the big quarter is that first quarter, right? You know, and I you can understand why they would put Kenny there. The second biggest match on this show, what would you say that was?
Like was looking on
Fletcher, Takeshita, Briscoe, was it Fletcher and King? Maybe one of the two. Yeah, yeah. I guess I didn't look
at any of these though as like marquee matches. Like again, they look great on paper, but I didn't see them as, you know, the like the match that you build the show around or that are going to like be especially, you know, perform well. We'll see.
What about segment? Was there like a main event segment to you?
I mean, you had the Moxley Swerve segment, like that is your pay-per-view main event angle. So, I mean, I guess you would look at that as well, which was promoted in advance. And then Kenny says he wishes he could wrestle every week, but he made it quick tonight. It'll be a different story at Dynasty when he has the three-way. And then Speedball Mike Bailey's music plays, and he comes out with his archenemy, the microphone. I was like, oh, no. This is going to be a test. And he gets into the ring, and Speedball says that Kenny Omega is an inspiration, admires him as a wrestler and as a person. And I'm not going to hold anything back, and I'm going to kick your head clean off your shoulders. So we have on one show, in this one, we have the Quebecer threatening to kick the head off the shoulders. And on the other show, we have Randy Orton threatening to kick the head off the shoulders of the Quebecer.
Oh, very interesting. Yes.
So, what'd you think about Bailey here? I'm not going to call this a great promo, but he, you know, it was a... He had a message to come out with. This is obviously, you know, the toughest part of his game. And it was more so just interesting that they put him out here to speak and not just hide that deficiency.
No, no. I mean, if he's going to be a regular on a national TV wrestling show, he's going to have to show a comfort, you know, doing this often. So I was happy to that we got a chance to see where he's currently at on the microphone. And I would like maybe grade this like a B minus, you know, like he's passable, but in this case,
and they kept it short as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is perfectly fine. You know, passable, but in this case that did feel rehearsed to me. Like he clearly spent a lot of time, maybe like doing these lines over and over to the point where it didn't feel so natural coming out of him. And that's okay. Like wrestling promos don't always have to sound natural, but I will say the standard, I think, though, of AEW promos is at a pretty high level, even for Kenny, like who isn't necessarily the best, you know, talker. But in this sort of like dynamic, he felt like somebody who was much more comfortable speaking as his natural voice. I would even look at Ricochet as somebody who I think is starting to evolve and found that within himself. So we hope that with these sort of repeated appearances, this amount of pressure on Speedball, that he'll see a similar evolution, you know, in the weeks ahead.
And we go to Ricochet, who's on the video screen by a pool, noting that he is getting married. And this is going to be the best day of my life until April 6th, when I beat Cornball and the former best bout machine. I'm going to leave with the girl and the gold. And as this ends, Kenny Omega, ever the polite Canadian, even in battle, does congratulate Ricochet on his nuptials and then said, this is not about making friends because I've already got a cat and the two of you are stepping stones in my legacy. And that is our setup for the match that is probably going to have the highest level of expectation for Dynasty.
Yeah, look, this match isn't necessarily being sold on promos. It's being sold on who the names are that are going to be in that ring, you know, at that pay-per-view. And just
Kenny, Rico, and Cornball.
Just kind of giving me the focus on these two, in particular the possibility of just seeing a Kenny Omega Speedball interaction is going to be great. If you remember, like we spoke to Speedball ahead of his match against Kota Ibushi, and I think Speedball was really excited for that match because of their shared background in DDT. Well, of course, like you can even argue, like, you know, Speedball and Omega might even have more crossover, you know, appeal between the two of them. I mean, we're also talking about both of them operating at near their peak levels of ability. So I'm sure the creativity will be incredible for their sequences, and Ricochet being the third person only will hopefully heighten that.
What do you think about Speedball's former locker room teammate, Yoshihiko, getting booked against Minoru Suzuki WrestleMania weekend?
One of the big matches of WrestleMania weekend, up there with the fifth,
the senior scramble.
Senior scramble. What are the other sort of what the fuck matches that have been booked so far?
Oh boy,
isn't Suzuki in another one? What's the one on Hitchcock that we were talking about recently?
I've got to pull up the lineup, so I can't do this off the top of my head.
The atmosphere will be amazing for Minoru Suzuki versus Yoshihiko. I don't know if Suzuki can pull off a great Yoshihiko match, though. It's a big challenge for him. Like, and I don't know if Suzuki is the type of wrestler that could like deliver. I think what we.
What if they do like a grappling style match? Like,
that'd be amazing. Yeah, I gotta watch it. I gotta see it. Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now. NordVPN.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. NordVPN.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is 2 editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
They showed the highlight from Collision with Bandito reclaiming Gravity's mask and the little girl in the front row giving Jericho the middle finger. I thought this girl was better than Ms. Girl.
I'm sorry, John. I'm pretty sure it's a little boy.
Really?
Pretty sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry to this person.
But you weren't the only one to make that mistake. I think Big Bill in the moment made the mistake too.
Okay, maybe that's what I was leaning on for the description. I do apologize. The learning tree is in the back.
This little kid, okay, is probably already training to become a professional wrestler, and they have the footage now to set up a feud with Chris Jericho 20 years from now when Jericho will be in his 70s and probably still wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, if New Japan is bringing Yuji Nagata's kid, they need to be looking at the next generation of kids' division. Mm-hmm. The learning tree is in the back, and Jericho needs Big Bill and Keith to prove that they belong in the learning tree. So that sets Big Bill and Keith off to prove their worth. And then Jericho says that it's not Gravity's mask he wants, it's Bandito's. And he issues, why would you put up your mask? Because you want this, as he holds up the ROH title. And we have a title versus mask match challenge issued by Jericho for Dynasty, not doing this at Supercard the next month, but this is the bigger show.
Yeah. I think the program has been a net positive for Bandito. Certainly, I think the Gravity angle has turned out really well. And I would say overall, it's been a good use of Jericho, you know, being a bit more of a serious version of his learning tree self. And with this sort of challenge to Bill and Keith, it seems like they could be teasing a breakup of them already or maybe just some sort of different evolution of whatever the learning tree will be.
MJF comes out. He insults Prince that they're because they're in Minnesota and does a Minnesota accent, calls out MVP. And my God, the Hurt Business, the Hurt Syndicate. They were so popular on this show. MJF refers to MVP as a legend. He says that he wants to go into the business of hurting people. And they go to shake on it when Lashley and Benjamin come out. Huge reaction for these two. And Lashley just walks up to MJF, puts his hand out, but he's not going to shake his hand. Instead, he wants the business card and he tears it up in front of MJF. MVP tries to calm him down. And obviously, Benjamin and Lashley do not trust this new recruit. But before they can get into it, Big Bill and Brian Keith walk out and they have real business to tend to. MVP tells Big Bill to put Brian Keith, his bitch, on a leash. And then Big Bill asks, MVP, are you a pimp or a businessman? And then they proceeded to just, you're bitch. Yeah, you're a bitch. Yeah, you're the MVP of being a bitch. This was the greatest exchange of insults that I've seen in years. And finally, MVP tells them to go win a match before they can earn a title shot. And we have Brian Keith and Big Bill trying to line up a tag title match down the road. You bitch.
Do we need to dissect this one? I mean, it was so on the one hand, it felt the interaction felt organic and similar to Charlotte and Tiffany Stratton, like they were just, you know, kind of put out there and looking to get one up on each other without necessarily just scripting those sort of, you know, insults at each other. Right.
And if nothing comes to you, have a safe word,
which is bitch. Yeah.
Bitch.
So on the one hand, like I felt about that interaction on SmackDown, this felt organic, but these sort of like combative battles, I think often leave me feeling an overall sense of like disorganization and just, I don't know if it necessarily helped the story overall, you know, similar to, I think, the reaction to Charlotte and Stratton and their face-to-face on Friday. Or if we even want to dig back even further, something like Copeland and Ricky Starks in an interaction that I think has been brought up a little bit more in recent months. I would much rather see two people actively work together than to just try to one-up each other on TV. And maybe it requires a little bit of this and it required maybe a little bit more from Big Bill coming back with some stronger material, but I don't know. I kind of left this feeling like one side kind of embarrassed the other. And I don't know if that was necessarily the best thing for the story.
The counter would be that, you know, we got years of these very scripted promo segments that were just mind numbing, that they were just so inauthentic. And the counter to that is segments where you want to have that kind of raw feel to it, where hopefully you can inspire like a real, you know, dissent between these two. And when that goes well, you get some of these great like Punk segments with Rollins or Drew McIntyre and plenty of people on AEW that can pull it off too. But sometimes when you are giving that leeway, the high, it can be a real great segment, but you also are running the risk that it's just going to not click. And I think this was one of those instances that you're going to run into. I will still take this where the guys have that level of leeway, but it did come off here as just, yeah, as instead of like a promo building a match, it was sort of, you know, one-upping each other and just
calling each other bitches. Yeah.
That's it. It just devolved into nothing. It just felt like kind of a silly back and forth. Renee speaks with Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa, who are teaming tonight for the first time in 3 years. Thunder Rosa still wants her women's belt she never lost. And Thunder Storm is dead. Tonight, they are Thunder Tits. And this led to a chant in the arena and throughout the match in the main event.
Thunder Tits is one of those names that's so fun that even the name alone, regardless of like how great they are in ring, might be enough to get the team over. Obviously in ring, they have plenty more to offer, but it's kind of like Beer Money in that, like, just the name alone, is going to make you want to watch the match. So beyond that, it seems like Rosa and Storm is going to be some sort of upcoming direction for a title match, you would think. So would that hint towards Storm retaining over Megan Bain at Dynasty?
I could, based on the finish tonight, I'd be I lean more towards them having like Megan Bain gives her, like, takes her right to the brink, but
right.
It's Storm retaining, and yeah, they're at least dangling, like Thunder Rosa could be in that mix too. I mean, also tonight we can mention, like, Jamie Hayter is back on Collision on Saturday. You know, there's a lot of different avenues you can go with the championship, but I think keeping Storm as the central focus is probably for the best. Like, they're booking this as the main event segment for the second week in a row.
If this is an extended team for Thunder Rosa leading to a title match against Toni Storm, it'll be the most significant thing she's had in years in AEW. And I think a great rebound from the whole chair shot that never was, controversy of that week.
Yeah, maybe that's something they could revisit as well. They can have a chair match at the end of this. Brody King against Kyle Fletcher. This was the longest match on the show, going almost 18 minutes. And this was a very physical match. We had Fletcher sent into the barricade multiple times. He's chopped. We haven't even brought up the crowd yet. This crowd in St. Paul was great tonight. They were so heated. Excellent. They were just all over Don Callis in this match. And it's not like one of those crowds where it's like they got all of their energy out on one act or one match and then flattened out. They were just great throughout the 2 hours. So this was a really great crowd they had in St. Paul. Fletcher stops King, sends him into the post. Then King hits a DVD onto the floor, and they beat the count in. Fletcher manages a tombstone, but King kicks out, and then it's King with the big lariat, hits an avalanche. Callis distracts as Mark Davis runs out to save Kyle from a cannonball, and then as they're on the turnbuckle fighting, Kyle Fletcher, behind the ref's back, gouges the eye of Brody King, leading to a top turnbuckle brainbuster, and Kyle wins the match in 17 minutes and 48 seconds. That I thought was the top match of the show. And then as Fletcher and Davis beat down on King, out came Powerhouse Hobbs to assist Brody King.
Very good, very hard-hitting match between the two. Very good chemistry between the two. Something that I think you could have expected to see in the Continental Classic, for instance. Crowd responded really well to Brody King, as they have been everywhere. He's somebody who I think is garnering reactions beyond the level of push he's currently receiving. So, I mean, he's being featured consistently, but not necessarily in, like, interesting stories, or really kind of like any sort of, like, it doesn't give you the feel that he's being set up for something big. He's just sort of a supporting act right now. It's fine, but I do think there's a great groundswell of just organic support for him everywhere he goes. So I hope they do take advantage of that. I'd love to see him with a mid-tier championship. He's sort of exactly the type of person you want holding one.
And so Powerhouse Hobbs is out and Mark Davis is out, and they're scheduled for a match, but they're not scheduled for the match right now. So all of security is out, including Von Wagner, Minnesota's finest. Yeah, he was one of the security guards here.
What?
So random. Like, to utilize, like, I understand using indie talent as security, but it's like Von Wagner, here was a guy that was like on national television for several years. One of the security guards.
Okay. Cool.
Callis is calling on Hobbs to be arrested as they fight off security. The bell rings, and I kind of like this shift, because we go from like an 18-minute match, and then we go to this, which all of a sudden just ends in 2.5 minutes, where Davis manages an enziguri after the Hobbs tried to get him up for the slam and just like nearly lost him and just landed on top of him. But then after the enziguri, runs into the spinebuster, and Hobbs wins in pretty dominant fashion in 2.5 minutes. And I would say Mark Davis is just slightly above that level of them beating a guy like this. But I kind of like this finish just came out of nowhere, and it, I think, just worked for what they're trying to do with Hobbs to win just in dominant fashion rather than needing to go 12 minutes with a Mark Davis.
I think he was going for the spine buster, which unfortunately was messed up for the finish. And because it was the finish, unfortunately, yeah, that is something that you will remember at the end of all of this. So didn't necessarily stick the landing for, I think, that emphatic squash, nor do I think like a spine buster. I know he's used it before as a finish, but I don't know. The spine buster doesn't feel like it's powerful enough, but anyway, unfortunate blemish there. But overall, I thought it was fine. Davis has kind of found his role as this, like, in the meat division now. And It's a good use of him. You know, I think it gives him a bit more of a unique personality than he had just as a tag team partner of Kyle Fletcher before. But I will say, like, it seems to me like his whole, like, character of being a reluctant member of the Callis family, that seems to be completely gone. Either that or, like, this contract must be pretty, like, ironclad. And if he screws up at all and doesn't look like an enthusiastic member, he's going to receive great punishment or something. But they aren't even dangling, like, any sort of doubt in his mind, you know, when he's doing all of this.
Do you think that Mark Davis should introduce the Shining Wizard as his new finisher and give it a new name?
Yes, because
the power of a turn knee.
Yeah, that would be great.
Wouldn't that put all of the pieces together? Just make sense of all of this. Mm-hmm. Make a winner out of this character. Lexi Nair speaks with Nick Wayne, Kip Sabian, and Mother Wayne. No Christian on this show. Nick says that things are finally making sense why Christian did what he did at Revolution. But last week, when Christian was not here, that was an example of being on the same page and properly following a game plan. So we're having the struggle for power in the patriarchy. Renee tried to...
I'm perfectly happy with the patriarchy sort of like in this space without any sort of threat of like a world title championship like on the horizon.
They can just feud amongst themselves for now until things heat up. But Renee tries to speak to Hangman, but Swerve interrupts, threatening if he gets involved in his title match after hinting at that last week, and Prince Nana pulls him away. Time for Tony Schiavone's sit down with Rated FTR. And I'm going to refrain from doing my Dax voice here because there was a lot of Dax here. Man, he is a hand talker, okay? I got to talk with my hands. I'm so sorry. And he says, I can't do Dax without doing Dax, but I'll try. He says that his emotions got the best of him last week, and he apologizes. And he says, you know, we took a break from our goal to become tag champions to help you, Copeland, achieve your goal. And of course, that didn't happen. I mean, it was very good, nice, like subtle shade here from Dax. Cope interrupts saying, I came back to help you guys. They put your heads in garbage bags. And he says, I didn't pull you away from the tag titles. Cash is caught in the middle here because Dax is his best friend and Copeland gave him a place to live when he was broke. And then Dax just says, okay, I said I'm sorry. And then he goes to cut a promo on the Hurt Syndicate to challenge them for the tag titles when all of a sudden Cash says, well, whoa, whoa, whoa. I think we still have something left here with the three of us. And that's the trios belts. And boy, was this shades of a Brett and Owen getting together to channel their rage towards the Quebecers. And let me guess, I think someone's leg's getting kicked out of their leg at Dynasty. That would be my thought here. And we get the Death Riders later accepting the challenge. So it is the Death Riders against Rated FTR for the trios belts at Dynasty.
You just made a comparison point to, I think, a pretty high bar, you know, set by the Hearts here in their breakup. And I think it's warranted because I thought this was fantastic.
Knowing the involvement here, they're probably going to do it beat for beat from that Quebecers match. Perhaps. Okay, I think we're getting the leg kicked right out from under them.
Maybe PCO is available.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would be wonderful.
I thought this was the best thing on the show, personally. I think
Wow.
Yeah, I did. I thought they perfectly captured a very realistic and very relatable, uncomfortable disagreement between a group of close people. You know, we've all been in these situations where, whether it be like colleagues or like if you've ever been in a band or like if, I don't know, just had a disagreement amongst like best friends or siblings, you get into some sort of passionate argument. One person attempts to apologize only to somehow make things even worse between all of you. And I thought Cope's...
That's my relatable portion to this segment.
I thought Cope, his acting has been really strong since he's come back from retirement. But I thought Dax was really great here, you know, especially having to show the disappointment very subtly in having to concede to staying as a trio with this guy he probably absolutely hates but can't say because he means so much to his partner. I thought Cash also gave great logic and motivation for like the connection that Adam Copeland has to him and why he hates this so much and why he feels so indebted to seeing this trio's thing stay put, whereas Dax has had enough of this and the silliness and wants to just, you know, go off and do their tag team run. Meanwhile, Copeland, his argument is that I didn't start any of this. I just came here to help you guys from the Death Riders. Although you can't argue that he might not be, a great opportunist, as I think, you know, is his nickname, right? Did Adam Copeland take advantage of his friend's misfortunes against the Death Riders to try to win himself a world championship? That is the question we should be asking.
This was a good segment. I like the way, and I like the match that's coming out of this as well for the pay-per-view as well. That's got like more than just, you know, the match quality. It's more so like what comes out of Rated FTR that you expect some kind of angle here.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Swerve and Nana come out, huge reaction for Swerve, and he calls out John Moxley, who comes out by himself, and Swerve asks, what happened to you, John? You used to be revered here, now you hide behind the Death Riders. You're not even worthy enough to be a champion, and asks, how's your back after last week? And I think everyone wanted to see this guy's shirt get torn off to see what his back looked like 7 days later, but we did not see that. Claudio quietly shows up behind Prince Nana, and I thought they were going to kill Nana, but they did not. Moxley gets his turn, and he asks, who and what is Swerve Strickland? Moxley knows what you could be. I had high hopes for you, and asks, how far are you willing to go at Dynasty? And then the day after, and the day after that, to be the top person. Swerve, it isn't what you think it is, and you have not suffered enough yet. My sport has been taken over by billionaires, Hollywood agents, frothy executives, and kids who see the world through an Instagram filter and don't know their head from their ass. But people like you, Swerve, give me hope, but I'm not giving it up to you. No handouts, and how far will you go? He says, I'm willing to go the whole way right now. And then Shafir shows up with a crowbar, but Swerve has already planned for this because there's Willow to stop her with a pipe. And Swerve states, I'm the most dangerous man in AEW. You bleed pints, I've bled buckets. You've been in Texas death matches, I've won them. And I'm going to take back the belt, lead the Dynasty era, and then you can have fun continuing to play John Moxley on TV as he goes to leave. And then a big brawl ensues between Shafir and Willow. So we're obviously getting much closer to that match. And coming out of this, we are going to get a mixed tornado match on TV next Wednesday with Swerve and Willow against Moxley and Shafir in a pretty rare Marina Shafir match these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, very interesting. Okay. I thought both guys were really strong in this face-to-face segment. I did feel like they were probably missing a little bit of connective tissue that would have allowed their promos to overlap a little bit. As it stood, it felt like both were cutting just individual promos, through like their own, with their own choice of topics, and not necessarily responding to what the other was saying. You know, Mox is kind of like talking about Swerve as if like Swerve is actually, you know, the ideal sort of like candidate to fit in his vision of AEW, right? Except Moxley wants to put Swerve to the ultimate test to see if he's worthy of, you know, being in that spot. Whereas like Swerve it was more so just kind of like criticizing Moxley for not being the same person that he used to be, and that he's now the new version. Well, maybe it does make sense on some level, but I don't know if it necessarily stood out to like clicked enough to me as it might have, maybe with a little bit of editing, a little bit of cleaning up. I don't know. How did you feel about it? Am I alone in that?
No, I think it's, I don't know. The more I try to like just parse the Moxley character and the motivation, the more I need Tylenol, because it's just like his complaint is that this is a soft generation, but all the guys he's facing are people that like like what, Brian Danielson was too soft. You had to replace him. You feuded with Copeland. You feuded with Swerve. Like these are all people that are.
I don't
like,
think he ever really addressed that like that point with Copeland. Now, does he consider Copeland to be like too soft, or what?
Well, it's the opposite. It's like all these people you're facing. It's like you have like some begrudging respect for all of these people. Like it's
Anyway. Yeah, the motivation like doesn't necessarily fit for everybody, but I think it really could for Swerve, and I think the fact that Moxley alluded to Swerve being a potential like sort of candidate again to fit into like exactly what he's talking about would tell you that. But it is just kind of missing the thing that really makes it easy enough for most of us to understand. Some people are going to like, you know, argue that no, why do you need everything to be so simple, you know? I just want things to make sense so that people aren't so critical of this Death Rider story anymore, because I think there is something there that can make sense. It just needs a little bit of editing, a little bit of cleaning up. And again, both individual promos sounded good, but it just didn't necessarily.
The core message, though, like John Moxley's core message is like, it's one that I think like the audience, it's like it's not really heat generating. It's like when he says like this industry has been taken over by Hollywood agents and billionaires, like that's a babyface line to a good portion of your audience. Like it's like the core of like the heat that this group gets is like just all the run-ins and stuff. Like, and it feels like that is the basis of fan revolt.
That's a disconnect. You know, like Moxley is arguing that this business has become too soft and it's being taken over by people that aren't willing to fight. Meanwhile,
Instagram.
Right. Meanwhile, he's cheating and not necessarily willing to fight unless he considers cheating a form of fighting. Anyway, we're just kind of talking in circles. But it is also sort of like it's reliant on the baby faces to be able to directly counter Mox's sort of arguments on his philosophy. Right. And we haven't had that really at all.
Joe is hanging out with Hook, and Shibata has commandeered a camera. So we're to believe that Shibata is filming all of this, I think. And they talk about Hook choking out Max Caster last week, and who should they run into but Max Caster talking to Top Flight and AR Fox. So Joe just goes up and he chokes this guy, like totally unprovoked. This is like, you know, this isn't the first time that, you know, there's been an AEW scuffle in the back, but this was just very unprovoked.
Actually, Joe stopped that one.
You're right. Yeah. His fuse was gone after this. So yeah, Max was just left for dead. Perfect metaphor for where Max Caster has gone the last year.
Yeah. I think this ops stuff has been fine. I don't really connect with like guys' gimmicks just being, I'm really cool. Look how cool I am. You know, I'm just choking out like dudes in the back. Like I'm, you know, I got my hoodie up and I'm just like, I don't give a shit. You know,
this image of Joe does not scream, I'm cool. That's like me thinking I'm cool.
Listen, Joe is pretty cool. He can pull it off. Okay. Like he's not exactly Steve Buscemi here, but
any man who puts that shirt on and decides, you know what goes with these jeans and I'm going out in public with this, don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I don't know. This felt a bit too like MTV. Anyway, Shibata was the cameraman, of course.
Yep. So Renee is with Jay White, and he adds himself to the Owen Hart Foundation and notes he'll be on Collision this week. So look out, Milwaukee. Top Flight from Minnesota get the hometown pop, and they beat Devo Knight and Alex Finley in just under 3 minutes. There was a messed up Manhattan drop spot here by Darius, but then after a springboard high cross by Dante, they did the Samoan drop, top rope splash combo, pinning Finley, and then got into it with Leo Rush and Action Andretti, who bought tickets to the show. So nice of them to take in Dynamite. There's a video for Will Ospreay. He's coming back next week, Way. He's finally back. The countdown is on. So next week is the last Dynamite before the pay-per-view, and Ospreay needs something for this pay-per-view. He's got nothing going on.
He'll probably get something.
Maybe they do the opening round of the Owen on Dynasty.
Because he
doesn't have really any story in place for a match, and I can't imagine them doing a pay-per-view without Ospreay.
Yeah, the first round of the Owen would be a good enough story, sure.
Well, then we need brackets by next week. We got three people so far. Mark Briscoe and Konosuke Takeshita followed this. So Callis is back out. At one point during the break, he's shouting instructions in Japanese. There was also a great comeback here by Taz where Callis calls one of the maneuvers by Mark Briscoe a judo chop. And dude, this is clearly a pet peeve of Taz's, who just yells, "There's no such thing as a judo chop. You cannot chop in judo." And I was like, I've never heard him complain about this before, but a totally, completely valid criticism.
Yeah, I never even gave that much thought, but I mean, obviously, as something, you know, I trust him. And
Taz had some very good interplay with Don Callis throughout the two matches he was on here. But
I'm assuming like judo chops might have just been called that as just what, like by Westerners, just thinking it sounded, I don't know, martial arty enough.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what kind of maneuver do Japanese people use? Chops. And that could be the only place that they practice judo.
Okay.
So the Froggy Bow misses, but then goes for the J-Driller. There's an exchange of exploders back and forth. Finally, Mark hits the J-Driller, but Konosuke gets the foot on the rope and then pops off the shoulders, rolling elbow, raging fire, and pins Mark in 11 minutes and 39 seconds. Good match that they had. Just not a whole lot going on with Takeshita at the moment. Like, he's lost the international title, and he's kind of not figured into anything concrete at the moment.
Sounds like he'd be a perfect candidate to enter the Owen Hart tournament.
Maybe they do Ospreay and Takeshita on a couple days' notice next
week. Oh, you got my money. Sure. Yeah.
Alicia Toot speaks. She goes up to speak with the Hurt Syndicate, and they say, "We need a minute." And then they speak in private with a boom mic on national television
in perfect lighting.
Just go through their entire conversation. Like,
we are still having to explain a little bit of the invisible camera. Otherwise, yes, this would have just been a backstage.
I love that someone thought, you know what would be better? Let's have Alicia try to interview you, and they sent her away. That was Alicia's involvement here. So MVP explains that he didn't take a vacation when he gave them time off, but we need a fourth member. But Benjamin and Lashley don't trust MJF. And MVP says, "I like his reprehensible qualities, but we'll put this to the side for now so that we're on the same page and focus on Big Bill and Brian Keith." So that is where things stand with the lingering issue of MJF.
I'm liking where this is going. I think this is promising. You know, MJF clearly isn't just going to accept an invitation into the group without some sort of like ulterior motive, right? So seems to me like Lashley and Shelton are privy to that. But what does MVP have sort of in store? Because MVP isn't also one to just get played that easily from MJF either, right? So I'm very curious to see where this ends up. We also had a Death Riders promo before this where essentially they just agreed to accept the challenge. Did you mention that?
I did when we did the rated FTR segment. But yeah, they said, "You're not challenging us, we're challenging you." Okay. So we got it. We got the match official. Collision on Saturday in Milwaukee features Wheeler Yuta against Dax Harwood, Top Flight against Big Bill and Brian Keith. Mercedes Moné will have a match. Queen Aminata take on the returning Jamie Hayter, and Jay White against Kevin Knight. That I think will be that could be a very good match on TV.
Yeah.
Totally disposable.
I'm sure it can be, but like all these matches can be good matches. Am I going to be that much more excited for that than I was for like Omega versus Christian or like, I don't know, Brody King versus Kyle Fletcher?
Let's be honest. Tony Khan has to book so many matches that he probably got a kick out of booking White versus Knight.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then next week, it's the mixed tornado match, Moxley and Shafir against Swerve and Willow, and Will Ospreay makes his long-awaited return in Peoria, Illinois. Tony Storm, Thunder Rosa, Thunder Tits, taking on Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. The crowd is chanting it. For whatever reason, Taz and Shivani would not say the team's name, although there was a giant sign for Thunder Tits in the front row. These people work fast in St. Paul.
Do you think the T-shirts will sell? Will people be wearing Thunder Tits T-shirts everywhere?
I cannot imagine how many creepy people will be wearing Thunder Tits shirts, and that will be a very awkward moment at every merchandise stand at AEW, which usually means two merchandise stands.
What is the graphic design that will accompany the Thunder Tits t-shirt, I wonder?
Probably involving hands. I don't know. Yeah. They get the heat on Thunder Rosa throughout the break, and then the tag is made to Thunderstorm, to Tony Storm, who's in with Megan Bain. Storm lands a headbutt, sends Bane to the floor, but she pulls out Tony, sidesteps, and in goes Bane to the steps, and then is hit with a tornado DDT. Storm eats a cutter, and then Thunder Rosa just returns, no tag, and just continues wrestling. Like, this is a tornado tag, and then Storm is the legal woman, so she resumes. Hip attack is hit onto Megan Bane, who just stands up, no selling this, like a Road Warrior Hawk taking a pile driver. Sits up, stuns Storm, and then Storm moves as Bane nails Ford by mistake with the kick, but then Bane catches Tony with Fate's Descent and took her time here, getting on top of Tony Storm and pinning her clean. 9 minutes, 33 seconds as Megan Bane. You cannot criticize the way they have built up Megan Bane. Like, they are giving her everything going into this. They're making this women's program like the show closer 2 weeks in a row. And yeah, I think it's a good build that they have done so far. And I thought the match was kind of average here. That said, I do think people are interested in this title match for next Sunday.
I think they've done a good job of making Bane like look strong and look like, you know, the division's sort of like threat, you know, the big monster threat that should be able to defeat everybody, including the champion, in a clean pinfall here, you know, against Toni Storm. I think what's missing for me, I know the gimmick is sort of like she doesn't speak, but I think she needs somebody to speak for her. And maybe that was the idea of pairing her with Penelope Ford, but Ford isn't the strong promo that I think somebody like her needs ahead of a title challenge. She needs somebody like she needs an advocate. She needs a Paul Heyman level to be able to prop her up and to be able to just cut those threatening promos with her standing next to her, and to be able to do a back and forth with Toni Storm, who is, I think, such a big character that, you know, this coming off of the Mina Shirakawa, the Mariah May feud, just kind of feels like it's very lacking in comparison, because we're not getting any sort of depth of story. It's basically Toni Storm going up against a big threat. But I think even in conveying that, the big threat could feel like an even bigger threat with a little bit of promo, and not necessarily from her, but from
Do you think they do a talking segment next week for the go home show?
I don't know if I want Megan Bane doing the talking. I kind of like the fact that she doesn't talk, but I think maybe Penelope Ford, if they want to try to make this like two-piece work, maybe Ford should be the one trying to cut a big promo for her.
I think they do have to do like a significant thing. Like, they've really pushed this match hard. Like, it's not like we have a ton of matches announced for this pay-per-view, but this has been pushed as hard as anything for this pay-per-view.
It's up to Toni Storm to really kind of like do the heavy lifting here. Like literally, and also I guess in terms of this promo here too, like she has to promote this as the biggest obstacle she's ever faced. And that's going to be a bit tough to, you know, maybe buy into considering how big of a threat Mariah May was. But Toni will have to really talk her up. Yeah.
So I thought that this was an episode of Dynamite that I'm going to still classify as disposable. That's not like a negative thing. It was just, this was a standard edition of Dynamite that
Did you get enjoyment out of it? Did you get some value out of it?
Yes. I'm not. If I didn't like it, I would have said this was a bad episode of Dynamite. This was not a bad episode of Dynamite, but this is also not one of like oh my God, this 2 hours of television, this was incredible. Like, I feel like a decent buzz for this pay-per-view, but I wouldn't say like overwhelming. I think they're coming back very, it feels like we just got through Revolution and next weekend's the pay-per-view that we're already at, which again, it'll be a very good lineup that we will have, but it's just, it does feel like a very quick turnaround that they're getting these next programs in place for.
I thought the episode did a perfectly fine job of like giving you the appropriate building blocks for the matches that are going to make up Dynasty. I agree with you that it didn't have that big blow away match. I also like wonder if should we be holding Dynamite to the standard that every episode should have a blow away match? Like Raw doesn't have a blow away.
I'm not talking about just bell to bell. I'm just talking about like marquee value as well. Like
Raw doesn't necessarily have that either. These days they have it more often than not, but not every episode, you know? Like some episodes are just about showcasing the talents that are going to be on the pay-per-view, right?
And that's fine, but and I could even rephrase that as like your big like segment. Like Raw is going to have John Cena and Cody Rhodes, like right. That is your True. Big appeal. And even with Moxley and Swerve, I wouldn't classify that as like your big just that standout segment that is on the show that is the big the big quarter that you would be looking at on paper for that. But again, like all the like this lineup, it looked very appealing on paper, but just not like from a marquee perspective.
I liked a lot of the content on the show, though, including like what they're trying to build up here with the Hurt Syndicate and MJF. I find that very interesting. I love the FTR Copeland sit down interview. I'm really looking forward to where that's going. And then we got the birth of Thunder Tits.
Thunder Tits was born, and
the reveal of Thunder Tits.
And we had the Max Caster segment. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm complaining about, but there you have it, everyone. Those were our thoughts on AEW Dynamite. We are here every Wednesday night. If you want to follow along the show live, all you have to do, postwrestlingcafe.com, sign up for $6 a month. And then every time we go live, a link is sent to you in the afternoon and you can join us live. You get the news of the day, plus all of the feedback, Q&A. And in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about Dark Side of the Ring and Way's much anticipated review of episode one of Stephanie's Places premiering on ESPN Plus. How did Way get a U.S. only service and be able to watch this? We're going to find out all of that.
I went to Russia.
With Joe Rogan.
To go to the U.S., yeah. Of course, I also had some friends help from our friends at NordVPN.com/postwrestling. So thank you to our sponsors. Special thank you as well to working the StreamYard today, intern Simon. Welcome back, and thank you very much for your help.
Yes, Simon says nothing on this show, but he is busy behind the scenes, so we always thank Simon. That's it on the YouTube channel, but for everyone on the cafe, the show rolls on.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.